Please. Wait a few weeks. Let's just see what happens.
We know what happens. We'll keep seeing each other in secret, and we'll fall in love, but they won't change their minds, and I'll still have to leave. But it'll hurt a hell of a lot worse in a few weeks than if I were to just leave right now. I walk to the closet and grab my suitcase. I open it and toss it on the inflatable mattress and start throwing my shit in it. I can take a bus to the next town and then stay in a motel until I figure out where to go. I need money, I say again. I'll pay you back every cent, Ledger. I promise. Ledger stomps over to me and shuts my suitcase. Stop it. He makes me turn and face him by pulling me in and wrapping me up in his arms. Stop. Please. We're too late. It already hurts so bad. I press my hands against his shirt and grip it in my fists. I start to cry. I can't bear the thought of not being around him, not seeing his smile, not feeling his support. I already miss him even though I'm still standing right here in his arms. But as much as the idea of leaving him hurts, I think my tears are for my daughter. They're always for her. Ledger. I say his name quietly, and then I lift my head from his chest and look up at him. The only thing you can do at this point is go over there and apologize to them. DM needs you. As much as it hurts, if they can't move past what I did to them, it isn't your job to repair or mend what's broken inside of them. It's your job to support them, and you can't do that with me in your life. His jaw is clenched. It looks like he's trying not to cry, but it also looks like he knows I'm right. He takes a step away from me and then opens his wallet.
You want my credit card?
He asks, pulling it out. He removes several $20 bills, too. He seems so upset and mad and defeated as he angrily yanks stuff out of his wallet. He tosses his credit card and the cash on the counter, and then he steps toward me, kisses me on the forehead, and leaves. He slams the door as he goes. I lean forward and press my elbows into the counter, and I hold my head in my hands and I cry even harder. Because I'm angry I allowed myself to get my hopes up. It's been well over 5 years since it happened. If they were ever going to forgive me, they'd have done it by now. They're just not the forgiving type. There are people who find peace in forgiveness. And then there are others who look at forgiveness as a betrayal. To them, forgiving me would feel like betraying their own son. I can only hope they change their minds someday. But until then, this is my life. This is where it's led me. This is where I start over. Again. And I'm going to have to do it without Ledger or his encouragement or his belief in me. I'm sobbing now, but I'm still able to hear the front door when it swings back open. I lift my head as he slams the door shut and strides across the room. He lifts me, setting me down on the counter so that we're eye to eye, and then he kisses me with a sad desperation, as if it's the last kiss he'll ever give me. After breaking our kiss, he looks at me with determination when he says,
I am going to be the best person I can be for your daughter. I promise. I'm going to give her the best life. And when she asks about her mother, I'm going to tell her what a wonderful person you are. I'll make sure she grows up knowing how much you love her.
I'm a fucking mess now, because I'm going to miss him so, so much. He presses his swollen mouth to mine, and I kiss him gently because I don't want to hurt him. Then our foreheads meet. It looks like he's struggling to keep his composure.
I'm sorry I couldn't do more for you.
He starts to back away, pulling apart from me, and it hurts too much to watch him go, so I stare at the floor. There's something beneath my feet. It looks like a business card, so I slide off the counter and pick it up. It's Ledger's snow cone punch card. It must have fallen out of his wallet when he took everything out of it.
Ledger, wait!
I meet him at the door and hand him his card. You need this, I say, sniffling back tears. You're so close to a free snow cone. He laughs through his pain, taking the card from me, but then he winces and drops his forehead to mine.
I'm so angry at them, Kenna. This isn't fair.
It isn't. But it isn't up to us. I kiss him one last time, and then I squeeze his hand and look at him pleadingly. Don't hate them, okay? They're giving my little girl a good life. Please don't hate them. He barely nods, but it's a nod. When he lets go of my hand, I don't want to watch him leave, so I go to my bathroom and close the door. A few seconds later, I hear my apartment door shut. I slide to the floor and fall apart.
Chapter 39. Ledger. I don't even go into my house when I get back home. I walk straight to Patrick and Grace's front door, and I knock. It was never a choice. DM will always be the most important girl in my life, no matter what or who or when. But that doesn't mean I'm not torn the fuck up right now. It's Patrick who opens the door, but Grace quickly joins him. I think she's afraid there might be another fight. They both look a little surprised to see the state of my injuries, but Patrick offers up no apologies. I don't expect him to. I look them both in the eye. DM wanted to show me her turtle. The sentence is so simple, but I'm saying so much. That sentence translates to, I choose DM. Let's go back to how things were before. Patrick eyes me for a moment, but then Grace steps aside and says, she's in her bedroom. It's forgiveness and acceptance, but it's not the forgiveness I really want from them. But I take it. Diem is on her floor when I get to her doorway. The turtle is a foot away from her, and she's trying to coax it toward her with a green Lego. So this is your turtle, huh? Diem sits up and beams a smile. Yep. She picks him up, and we meet at her bed. I sit down and lean against the headboard. She crawls to the middle of the bed and hands me the turtle, then curls up at my side. I place him on my leg, and he starts to crawl toward my knee. Why did Nono hit you? She's looking at my lip when she asks this. Sometimes adults make bad decisions, Dee. I said something that hurt his feelings, and he got upset. It's not his fault. It was my fault. Are you mad at him? No. Is Nono still mad? More than likely. No. I want to change the subject. What's your turtle's name? Diem picks him up and lays him on her lap.
Ledger.
I laugh. You're naming the turtle after me?
Yes, because I love you.
She says that in the sweetest voice, and it makes my heart clench. I wish Kenna could be the recipient of Diem's words right now. I kiss her on top of the head. I love you too, Dee. I put her turtle in its aquarium, and then I crawl back onto her bed and stay with her until she nods off. And then I stay a little while longer, just to be certain she's asleep. I know Patrick and Grace love her, and I know they love me, so the last thing they would ever do is separate the two of us. They can be angry, but they also know how much DM loves me, so even if the three of us can't work our shit out, I know I'll always be a huge part of DM's life. And as long as I'm a part of DM's life, I'm going to fight for what's best for her. I should have been doing it all along. And what's best for DM is having her mother in her life. It's why I did what I did before I left Kenna's apartment. As soon as Kenna closed her bathroom door, I closed her apartment door and pretended to leave. Instead, I grabbed her phone. The password was an easy guess. DM's birthday. I opened her Google Docs and found the file with all the letters she's written to Scotty, and I forwarded the file to my email address before sneaking out. I stay in DM's bedroom and pull up Patrick and Grace's printer network on my phone. I open my email and find the letter Kenna read to me, and I skip over all the rest of the letters she's written to Scotty. I've already violated her privacy enough by using her phone and forwarding these to myself. I don't plan to read any of the others unless she tells me I can someday. Tonight, I just need one of the letters. I hit print, and I close my eyes and listen for the sound of the printer to activate in Patrick's office across the hall. I wait until it finishes printing, and then I sneak out of DM's bed and wait for a moment in her room to make sure I didn't wake her up. She's sound asleep, so I slip out of her room and into Patrick's office. I grab the letter off the printer and make sure all of it printed. Wish me luck, Scotty, I whisper. When I emerge from the bedroom, they're both in the kitchen. Grace is looking at her phone, and Patrick is emptying the dishwasher. They both look up at the same time. I have something I need to say, and I really don't want to yell, but I will if I have to. So I think we should go outside because I don't want to wake up DM. Patrick closes the dishwasher. We don't really want to hear what you have to say, Ledger. He motions toward the door. You should go. I have a lot of empathy for them, but I'm afraid I've just met my limit. A wave of heat climbs up my neck, and I try to push down my anger, but it's so hard when I've given them so much. I recall the words Kenna said to me right before I left her. Please don't hate them. I've given my life to that little girl, I say. You owe this to me. I'm not leaving your property until we talk about this. I walk out the front door and wait in their yard. A minute passes, maybe two. I take a seat on their front patio. They're either going to call the police or they're going to come outside or they're going to go to bed and ignore me. I'll wait here until one of those three things happens. It's several minutes before I hear the door open behind me. I stand up and spin around. Patrick walks out of the house just far enough to give Grace space in the doorway. Neither of them looks open to what I'm about to say, but I have to say it anyway. There will never be a good time for this conversation. There will never be a good time to take the side of the girl who ruined their lives. I feel like the words I'm about to say are the most important words that will ever come from me. I wish I were more prepared. Kenna deserves better than to have me and my plea be the only hope left between her and Diem. I blow out an unsteady breath. Every decision I make is for Diem. I ended my engagement with a woman I loved because I wasn't sure she would be good enough for that little girl. That should tell you that I would never put my own happiness before DM's. I know you both know that. And I also know you're just trying to protect yourselves from the pain Kenna's actions caused. But you're taking the worst moment of Kenna's life and you're making that moment who she is. That isn't fair. It isn't fair to Kenna. It isn't fair to DM. I'm starting to wonder if it's even fair to Scotty. I hold up the pages in my hand. She writes letters to him. To Scotty. She's been doing it for 5 years. This is the only one I've read, but it was enough to change my entire opinion of her. I pause and then backtrack on my words. Actually, that's not true. I forgave Kenna before I even knew the contents of the letter. But the second she read this out loud to me, I realized she's been hurting just as much as all of us have. and we're slowly killing her by continuing to drag out her pain. I squeeze my forehead and put even more emphasis on the words I'm about to speak. We are keeping a mother from her child. That's not okay. Scotty would be so mad at us. It grows quiet when I stop speaking. Too quiet. It's like they aren't even breathing. I hand Grace the letter. It'll be hard to read. But I'm not asking you to read it because I'm in love with Kenna. I'm asking you to read it because your son was in love with her. Grace starts to cry. Patrick still won't look me in the eye, but he reaches for his wife and pulls her to him. I've given the last 5 years of my life to you guys. All I'm asking for in return is 20 minutes. It probably won't even take you that long to read the letter. After you read it and take time to process it, we'll talk. And I'll respect whatever decisions the two of you make. I swear I will. But please, please give me the next 20 minutes. You owe Diem the opportunity to have another person in her life who will love her as much as Scotty would have loved her. I don't give them an opening to argue or hand the letter back to me. I immediately turn and walk to my house and disappear inside it. I don't even look out the window to see if they've gone inside or if they're reading the letter. I'm so nervous, I'm shaking. I look for my parents and find them in the backyard. My father has items from the RV spread out across the grass, and he's using the water hose to clean them. My mother is sitting in the patio love seat reading a book. I take a seat next to her. She looks up from her book and smiles, but when she sees the look on my face, she closes the paperback. I drop my head in my hands, and I start to cry. I can't help it. I feel like the lives of everyone I love are hanging on this moment, and it's fucking overwhelming.
Ledger,
my mother says.
Oh, honey.
She wraps her arm around me and hugs me.
Chapter 40. Kenna. I wake up with a migraine due to how much I cried last night. I expected Ledger to text me or call me, but he never did. Not that I want him to. A clean break is better than a messy one. I hate that my choices from that one night years ago have somehow created another casualty all these years later. How long will the aftershocks from that night continue? Will I feel the ramifications forever? Sometimes I wonder if we're all born with equal amounts of good and evil. What if no one person is more or less malevolent than another, and that we all just release our bad at different times in different ways? Maybe some of us expel most of our bad behaviors as toddlers, while some of us are absolute horrors during the teenage years. And then maybe there are those who expend very little malice until they're adults. And even then, it just seeps out slowly, a little bit every day until we die. But then that would mean there are people like me, those who release their bad all at once, in one horrific night. When you get all your evil out at once, the impact is much bigger than when it seeps out slowly. The destruction you leave behind covers a much bigger circumference on the map and takes up a much larger space in people's memories. I don't want to believe that there are good people and bad people, and no in-between people. I don't want to believe I'm worse than anyone else. As if there's a bucket full of evil somewhere within me that continues to refill every time it runs empty. I don't want to believe I'm capable of repeating behavior I've displayed in the past. But even after all these years, people are still suffering because of me. Despite the devastation I've left in my wake, I am not a bad person. I am not a bad person. It took 5 years of weekly therapy sessions to help me realize this. I only recently learned how to say it out loud. I am not a bad person. I've been listening to the playlist Ledger made me all morning. It really is just a bunch of songs that have nothing to do with anything sad. I don't know how he managed to find this many songs. It had to take him forever. I slide Marianne's headphones over my ears, and I put the playlist on shuffle and start to clean my apartment. I want my security deposit back when I figure out where I'm moving to, so I don't need a reason for Ruth not to refund it to me. I'll leave the apartment 10 times cleaner than I found it. I clean for about 10 minutes, when I start to hear a beat in the song that doesn't belong. It takes me way too long to realize the beat is actually not in the song. It's a knock. I slip off my headphones and hear it even louder this time. Someone is definitely knocking at my front door. My heart rate speeds up, because I don't want it to be Ledger, but I need it to be Ledger. One more kiss wouldn't break me. Maybe. I tiptoe toward the door and look through the peephole. It's Ledger. I press my forehead to the door and try to make the right decision. He's having a weak moment, but I shouldn't do this. His weak moments will be my downfall if I cater to them. We'll just go back and forth until we're both completely broken. I open my text to him on my phone and type out, "I'm not opening the door." I watch him read it through the peephole, but his expression is unwavering. He looks right into the peephole and points down to the doorknob. Fuck. Why did he have to point? I unlock the deadbolt and open the door just 2 inches. "Don't kiss me or touch me or say anything sweet." Ledger smiles.
"I'll do my best."
I open the door cautiously, but he doesn't even try to come inside once I have the door open. He stands up straight and says,
"Do you have a minute?"
I nod. "Yeah, come in." He shakes his head.
"Not for me."
His attention moves away from me, and he points inside my apartment. But then he steps away from the door. Grace walks into my line of sight. I immediately slap my hand over my mouth, because I wasn't expecting her, and I haven't been face to face with her since before Scotty died, and I had no idea it would knock the breath out of me. I don't know what it means. I refuse to let myself think this means anything at all. But there's too much hope inside me to keep buried in her presence. I back into my apartment, but tears are spilling from my eyes. There's so much I want to say to her. So many apologies. So many promises. Grace steps inside my apartment, and Ledger stays outside but closes the door to give us privacy. I grab a paper towel and wipe at my eyes. It's pointless. I don't think I've cried like this since I gave birth to Diem and watched them take her away from me.
"I'm not here to upset you,"
Grace says. Her voice is gentle. So is her expression. I shake my head.
"It's not. I'm sorry. I need a minute before I can talk."
Grace motions toward the sofa. "Can we sit?" I nod, and we both take a seat on the couch. Grace watches me for a moment, probably judging my tears, wondering if they're real or forced. She reaches into her pocket and pulls something out. At first, I think it's a handkerchief, but upon closer inspection, I realize it's a small black velvet bag. Grace hands me the bag, and I have no idea why. I pull the strings to loosen the opening to the velvet bag, and then I dump the contents into my palm. I gasp. "What? How?" "I'm holding the ring I fell in love with all those years ago when Scotty took me to the antique store. The $4,000 gold ring with the pink stone that he couldn't afford. I've never told anyone that story. So I'm extremely confused as to how Grace is in possession of this ring. How do you even have this?"
"Scotty called me the day you two saw the ring. He said he wasn't ready to propose to you,
but that he already knew what ring he was going to propose with when the time came. He couldn't afford it, but he was afraid someone else was going to buy it before he got the chance. We let him borrow the money. He gave me the ring and made me promise to keep it in a safe place until he could pay us back. My hands are shaking as I put the ring on my finger. I can't believe Scotty did that. Grace releases a quick rush of air. I'll be honest, Kenna. I didn't want that ring after he died. And I didn't want you to have it because I was so mad at you. But when we found out Diem was a girl, I decided to hold on to it, just in case I wanted to pass it on to her someday. But after giving it some thought, that's really not my decision to make. I want you to have it. Scotty bought it for you. There's too much coursing through me to process this, so it takes me a moment to recover. I shake my head. I'm too scared to believe her. I don't even allow the words to sink in. Thank you. Grace reaches over and squeezes my hand, prompting me to look at her. I promised Ledger I wouldn't tell you this, but he gave us one of the letters you wrote to Scotty. I'm shaking my head even though she isn't finished talking. How did Ledger get one of those letters? Which one did he give them? He made me read it last night. Her expression falls. After hearing your version of events, I was even more devastated and angry than I was before I read it. It was so hard, hearing all those details. I cried all night. But this morning when I woke up, it was as if an overwhelming sensation of peace had washed over me. Today was the first morning I didn't wake up angry at you. She wipes at the tears now sliding down her face. All these years, I assumed your silence in the courtroom was indifference. I assumed you left him in that car because you only cared for yourself and didn't want to get in legal trouble. Maybe I assumed all those things because it was easier to have someone to blame for such a horrific and pointless loss. And I know your grief shouldn't bring me peace, Kenna. But it's so much easier to understand you now than when I assumed you never grieved at all. Grace reaches toward a strand of hair that's fallen loose from my ponytail, and she brushes it gently behind my ear. It's something a mother would do, and I don't understand it. I don't know how she can go from hating me to forgiving me in such a short amount of time. So I continue to be wary of this moment. But the tears in her eyes feel like the truth. I am so sorry, Kenna. She says that with such sincerity. I'm responsible for keeping you from your daughter for 5 years, and there's no excuse for that. The only thing I can do is make sure you don't go another day without knowing her. My hand is trembling when I bring it to my chest. I get to meet her? Grace nods, and then she hugs me when I fall apart. She runs a soothing hand over the back of my head and allows me several minutes to absorb everything that's happening. This is everything I've ever wanted, and it's all coming at me at once. It's both physically and emotionally overwhelming. I've had dreams like this before. Dreams where Grace shows up to forgive me and lets me meet Diem. But then I wake up alone and realize it was a cruel nightmare. Please let this be real. Ledger is probably dying not knowing what's going on in here. She stands up and walks to the door to open it for him. Ledger's eyes search frantically until they land on mine. When I smile at him, he immediately relaxes, as if my smile is the only thing that mattered in this moment. He pulls Grace in for a hug first. I hear him whisper, "Thank you," against her ear. She looks at me before she leaves my apartment. "I'm making lasagna tonight. I want you to come for dinner." I agree with a nod. Grace leaves, and Ledger is wrapping me in his arms before she even closes the door.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I say it over and over because I know this would never have happened if it weren't for him. Thank you. I kiss him. Thank you. When I finally stop thanking and kissing him long enough to pull back and look him in the eye, I see he's crying too. It fills me with a sense of gratitude like I've never known. I am so grateful for him. To him. This might be the exact moment I fall in love with Ledger Ward. I'm about to be sick.
Want me to pull over?
I shake my head. No, drive faster. Ledger squeezes my knee reassuringly. It was torture having to wait until this afternoon to make our way to Patrick and Grace's house. I wanted him to take me to DM as soon as Grace left my apartment. But I want everything to be on their terms. I'll be as patient as I need to be. I'm going to respect their rules. I'll respect their timeline and their choices and their wishes. I'm going to show them as much respect as I know they've shown my daughter. I know they're good people. Scotty loved them. They're just also hurt people. So I respect the time they needed to come to this decision. I'm nervous I'm going to do something wrong, say something wrong. The only other time I've been inside their house was such a series of missteps, and I need this time to be different because there's so much at stake. We pull into Ledger's driveway, but we don't immediately get out of the truck. He gives me a pep talk and kisses me about 10 times, but then I become more nervous and excited than I've ever been, and all the emotions all start to run together. If I don't get it over with, I might explode. He holds my hand tightly in his as we cross the street and walk across grass DM has played on and knock on the door to the house DM lives in. Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. I'm squeezing Ledger's hand like I'm in the middle of an intense contraction. The door finally opens, and standing right in front of me is Patrick. He looks nervous, but he somehow smiles through it. He pulls me in for a hug, and it isn't just a forced hug because I'm standing in front of him, or because his wife encouraged him to hug me. It's a hug full of so many things. Enough things that when Patrick pulls away, he has to wipe at his eyes.
Diem is out back with her turtle,
he says, motioning down the hallway. There are no harsh words from him, no negative energy. I don't know if now is the right time to apologize, but since Patrick is pointing us toward DM's location, I feel like they want to save whatever sits between the three of us for later. Ledger holds my hand as we walk into the house. I've been in the house before, and I've been in the backyard before, so there's a sense of familiarity that's comforting. But everything else is frightening. What if she doesn't like me? What if she's mad at me? Grace appears from the kitchen, and I pause before we head to the backyard. I look at Grace. What have you told her? About my absence? I just want to make sure. Grace shakes her head.
We really haven't talked to her about you at all. She asked once why she didn't live with her mother, and I told her your car wasn't big enough.
I laugh nervously. What? Grace shrugs.
I panicked. I didn't know what to say.
My car isn't big enough? I can work with that. In my mind, I had feared they had poisoned her against me. I should have known better.
We thought we'd leave the rest up to you,
Patrick says.
We weren't sure how much you wanted her to know.
I nod and smile and try not to cry. I look at Ledger and he's like an anchor by my side, keeping me steady. Will you come with me? We walk toward the back door. I can see her sitting in the grass. I watch her from the screen door for a couple of minutes, wanting to take in everything about her before whatever comes next. I'm scared of what comes next. Terrified, really. This is almost the exact same feeling as being in labor with her. I was terrified, in uncharted territory, but also full of more hope and excitement and love than I'd ever felt. Ledger eventually gives me an encouraging nudge, so I open the door. Diem looks up and sees Ledger and me standing on the back porch. She gives me a quick glance,
but when her eyes land on Ledger, she lights up. She runs to him and he catches her in his arms. I get a whiff of strawberry shampoo. I have a daughter who smells like strawberries. Ledger sits on the back porch swing with Diem and points to the empty seat next to him, so I take a seat with them. Diem is in his lap, looking at me as she curls up to Ledger.
Diem, this is my friend Kenna.
Diem smiles at me, and it almost sends me to the floor.
Do you want to see my turtle?
She asks, perking up.
I'd love to.
Her tiny little hand grips two of my fingers, and she slides off Ledger and pulls me. I glance at Ledger as I stand, and he gives me a reassuring nod. Diem takes me to the grass, and she plops down next to her turtle. I lie down on the other side of her turtle so that I'm facing Diem.
What's his name?
Ledger.
She giggles and holds up the turtle.
He looks just like him.
I laugh, and she's trying to get her turtle to come out of his shell. But I can't stop staring at her. Seeing her on video is one experience, but getting to be near her and feel her energy is like a rebirth.
Want to see my jungle gym? I got it for my birthday. I turn 5 next week.
Diem is running toward her jungle gym, so I follow her. I glance back at Ledger, and he's still sitting on the porch swing, watching us. Diem pokes her head out of the jungle gym and says,
Ledger, can you put Ledger in his tank so he doesn't get lost?
Sure will,
he says, standing. Diem grabs my hand and pulls me inside the jungle gym, where she sits down in the center of it. I feel more comfortable here. No one can see us, and that puts me a little more at ease knowing people aren't judging how I interact with her in this moment.
This used to be my daddy's, Diem says. Nono and Ledger put it back together for me.
I knew your daddy.
Were you his friend?
I smile. I was his girlfriend.
I loved him very much.
Diem giggles.
I didn't know my daddy had a girlfriend.
I see so much of Scotty in her right now. In that laugh, I have to look away from her face because the tears start to fall. Diem notices my tears, though.
Why are you sad? Do you miss him?
I nod, wiping away my tears.
I do miss him. But that's not why I'm crying. I'm crying because I'm so happy I finally get to meet you.
Diem cocks her head and says,
Why?
She's 3 whole feet away from me. And I just want to hold her and hug her. I pat the spot right in front of me. Come closer. I want to tell you something. Diem crawls toward me and sits with her legs crossed. I know we've never met before, but I don't even know how to say this, so I just say it in the simplest way. I'm your mother. Diem's eyes fill with something, but I don't know what her expressions mean yet. I don't know if that's surprise or curiosity.
Really?
I smile at her.
I am. You grew inside my tummy. And then when you were born, Nana and Nono took care of you for me because I couldn't.
Did you get a bigger car?
I release a laugh. I'm glad they gave me that tidbit of information, or I would have had no idea what she's referring to. I actually don't have a car anymore, but I will soon. I just couldn't wait to meet you, so Ledger gave me a ride. I've been wanting to meet you for so long. Diem doesn't have much of a reaction. She just smiles, and then she crawls across the grass and starts flipping tic-tac-toe squares that make up a part of the wall of the jungle gym.
You should come to my t-ball game. It's my last one.
She spins one of the letters on the wall.
I would love to come watch you play t-ball.
Someday I'm gonna do that thing with the swords, though, Diem says. Hey, do you know how to play this game?
I nod and move closer to her so I can show her how to play tic-tac-toe. I realize that this moment isn't nearly as monumental to Diem as it is to me. I've played out a million scenarios in my head of how this would go, and in every scenario, DM was either sad or angry that it took me so long to be a part of her life. But she truly didn't even know that I was missing. I'm so grateful for that. All these years of worry and devastation have all been one-sided, which means DM has been whole and happy and fulfilled. I couldn't have asked for a better outcome. It's like I just get to slip into her life without so much as a ripple. DM grabs my hand and says,
I don't want to play this. Let's go to the swings.
She abandons the game and we crawl out of the center of the jungle gym. She climbs into a swing and says,
I forgot your name.
It's Kenna. I say that with a smile, because I know I'll never have to lie to anyone about my name again.
Will you push me?
I push her on the swing, and she starts telling me about a movie Ledger took her to see recently. Ledger walks out onto the porch and sees us talking. He comes over to us and stands behind me, wrapping his arms around me. He kisses the side of my head, right when Diem turns and looks at us.
Gross!
Ledger kisses the side of my head again and says,
Get used to it, Dee.
Ledger takes over pushing Diem's swing, and I sit down in the swing next to her and watch them. Diem tips her head back and looks at Ledger.
Are you gonna marry my mom?
I should probably have a reaction to the marriage part of that question, but my brain only focuses on the fact that she just said, my mom.
I don't know. We still need to get to know each other better.
Ledger looks at me and smiles.
Maybe one of these days I'll be worthy enough to marry her.
What does worthy mean? She asks.
It means good enough.
You're good enough, DM says. That's why I named my turtle Ledger.
She tilts her head back again and looks at him.
I'm thirsty. Will you bring me a juice?
Go get it yourself,
he says. I get out of the swing. I'll get you a juice. I hear Ledger mutter to her.
You're so rotten.
As I walk away, DM laughs.
I am not.
When I go inside, I watch them from the back door for a moment. They're adorable together. She's adorable. I'm scared I'm about to wake up and realize none of this actually happened. But I know it's happening. And I know I'll eventually embrace that I deserve this. Maybe after I finally have a real conversation with the Landrys. I walk into the kitchen to find Grace cooking. She wants some juice, I say as I enter. Grace's hands are full of chopped tomatoes, and she drops them into a salad.
It's in the fridge.
I grab a juice and observe Grace as she prepares dinner. I want to be more helpful and interactive with her than I was the first time Scotty brought me to this house. How can I help? Grace smiles at me.
You don't have to. Go spend time with your daughter.
I start to walk out of the kitchen, but my steps feel so heavy. I have so much I want to say to Grace that I didn't have the chance to say to her earlier today at my apartment. I turn around, and I'm sorry is on the tip of my tongue. But I feel like if I open my mouth, I'll cry. My eyes meet Grace's, and she can see the agony in my expression. Grace, my voice is a whisper. She immediately walks over to me and pulls me in for a hug. It's an amazing hug, a forgiving hug.
Hey,
she says soothingly.
Hey, listen to me.
She pulls back, and we're about the same height, so we're eye to eye when she takes the juice from me and sets it aside. Then she squeezes both of my hands reassuringly.
We go forward, she says. That's it. It's that simple. I forgive you, and you forgive me. And we go forward together and give that little girl the best life we can give her. Okay?
I nod, because I can do that. I forgive them. I've always forgiven them. It's myself I've been hard on. But I think I've reached the point that forgiving myself finally feels okay. So I do. You're forgiven, Kenna.
Chapter 41. Ledger. She fits. It's surreal, and to be honest, a little overwhelming. We just finished eating dinner, but we're all still sitting at the table. Diem is curled up in my lap, and I'm sitting next to Kenna. She seemed nervous when we first sat down to dinner, but she's eased up a lot, especially after Patrick started telling stories, giving Kenna a highlight reel of Diem's life. He's telling her the story of when Diem broke her arm 6 months ago. She spent the first 2 weeks thinking she had to wear the cast forever. None of us thought to tell her that breaks heal, and Diem assumed that when a person broke a bone, it stayed broken for good.
Oh no, Kenna says, laughing.
She looks down at Diem and runs a soothing hand over her head.
You poor thing.
Diem reaches a hand toward Kenna, and she accepts it. Diem effortlessly slips off my lap and onto Kenna's. It happens so fast and quietly. Diem tucks herself into Kenna, and Kenna wraps her arms around Diem like it's the most natural thing in the world. We're all staring at them, but Kenna doesn't notice because her cheek is pressed against the top of Diem's head. I swear I'm about to lose it right here at the table. I clear my throat and push my chair back. I don't even excuse myself because I feel like my voice will crack if I try to speak, so I silently leave the table and walk out back. I want to give the four of them privacy. I've been somewhat of a buffer for all of them today, but I want them to interact without me there. I want Kenna to feel comfortable with them and not have to lean on me for that comfort because it's important she have a relationship with them outside of me. I could tell Patrick and Grace were pleasantly surprised at how different she is from what we all expected her to be. It proves that time, distance, and devastation allow people enough opportunity to craft villains out of people they don't even know. But Kenna was never a villain. She was a victim. We all were. The sun hasn't set yet, but it's getting close to 8, and that's DM's bedtime. I'm sure Kenna is nowhere near ready to leave, but I'm looking forward to the aftermath of today. I want to get her alone and be near her while she processes what I'm sure has been the best day of her life. The back door opens, and Patrick walks out onto the porch. He doesn't sit down in a chair. He leans against one of the pillars and stares out over the backyard. When I left him and Grace alone with the letter last night, I was expecting some sort of immediate reaction. I wasn't sure what it would be, but I thought I'd get something. A text, a phone call, a knock at my front door. I got nothing. 2 hours after I left them, I finally worked up the courage to look out my window at their house, and all their lights were out. I've never felt as hopeless as I felt in that moment. I thought my efforts had failed, but this morning, after an entire night of insomnia, I heard a knock at my door. When I opened it, Grace was standing there without Diem or Patrick. Her eyes were puffy like she'd been crying.
I want to meet Kenna.
That's all she said. We got in my truck, and I took her to Kenna's apartment, not knowing what to expect, or if she was going to accept Kenna or reject Kenna. When we arrived at Kenna's place, Grace turned to me before exiting my truck, and she said,
"Are you in love with her?"
There was absolutely no hesitation when I nodded.
"Why?"
There was no hesitation after that question either.
"You'll see.
She makes it a hell of a lot easier to love her than hate her." Grace sat in silence for a moment before finally getting out of my truck. She seemed almost as nervous as I was. We walked upstairs together, and she told me she wanted some time alone with Kenna. As hard as it was not knowing what was being said between them inside that apartment, it isn't nearly as hard as not knowing what Patrick thinks about all this. We haven't had a chance to talk about it at all. I'm guessing that's why he's out here. My hope is that he and Grace are on the same page, but they might not be. He might only be accepting Kenna because Grace needs him to. What are you thinking? I ask him. Patrick scratches his jaw, mulling over my question. He answers without looking directly at me. If you would have asked me that question when you and Kenna arrived a few hours ago, I would have told you I'm still pissed at you, and that I'm not sorry for hitting you. He pauses and sits down on the top porch step. He clasps his hand together between his knees and looks over at me. But that changed when I saw you with her. When I saw the way you looked at her. The way your eyes teared up when Diem crawled onto her lap at the dinner table. Patrick shakes his head. I've known you since you were Diem's age, Ledger. Not one time, in all the years I've known you, have you ever given me a single reason to doubt you. If you're telling me Kenna is worthy of Diem, then I believe you. The least I can do is believe you. Fuck. I look away from him and wipe at my eyes. I still don't know what to do with all these fucking feelings. There have been so many since Kenna returned. I lean back in my chair without a clue how to respond to him. Maybe I don't. Maybe his words are enough for this conversation. We sit in silence for a minute or two. It feels different from the bouts of silence I've sat through with him before. This time, the quiet is comfortable and peaceful, and not at all sad. Holy shit, Patrick says. I look over at him, but his focus is on something in the backyard. I follow his line of sight until... No. No way. I'll be damned, I say quietly. Is that a fucking pigeon? It is. It's an actual pigeon. A real live white and gray pigeon just walking around in the backyard like this isn't the most miraculous timing a bird has ever had in the history of birds. Patrick laughs. It's a laugh full of bewilderment. He laughs so much it makes me laugh. But he doesn't cry. It's the first time a reminder of Scotty doesn't make him cry, and I feel like this is huge. Not only because the chances of this random pigeon landing in this backyard at this very moment are probably one in a billion, but because Patrick and I have never had a serious conversation related to Scotty that didn't end in me sneaking away so he could cry alone. But he laughs. And that's all he does. And for the first time since Scotty died, I feel a sense of hope for him. For all of us. The only other time Kenna has been inside my house was right after she showed up on this street unannounced. That wasn't a good experience for either of us, so when I open my front door and guide her inside, I want her to feel welcome. I'm looking forward to getting Kenna all to myself tonight, in an actual bed. The few times we've been together have been damn near perfect, but I've always felt she deserved better than an inflatable mattress, or my truck, or a hardwood floor. I want to show her around, but my need to kiss her is stronger. As soon as I close the front door, I pull her to me. I kiss her the way I've been wanting to kiss her all night. It's the first kiss without a little sadness or fear in it. This is my favorite kiss so far. It goes on for so long I forget about showing her around the house, and I pick her up and take her straight to my bed. When I lower her to the mattress, she sprawls out and sighs. Oh my God, Ledger. It's so soft. I reach to the remote next to my bed and turn the massage mode on so the bed vibrates. It makes her groan, but when I try to lower myself on top of her, she kicks me to the side.
I need a minute to fully appreciate your bed,
she says, closing her eyes. I sidle up next to her and stare at the smile on her face. I lift a hand and gently outline her lips, barely touching them. Then I trace my fingertips across her jaw and down her neck. I want to tell you something, I say quietly. She opens her eyes and smiles gently, waiting for me to speak. I bring my hand back up to her face and touch her impeccable mouth again. I've spent the last couple of years trying to be a good role model for Diem, so I've read a few books on feminism. I learned that putting too much focus on a girl's looks can be damaging, so instead of telling Diem how pretty I think she is, I put the focus on all the things that matter, like how smart she is and how strong she is. I've tried treating you the same way. It's why I've never complimented your looks before or told you how fucking beautiful I think you are. But I'm glad I've never told you before this moment, because you've never been more beautiful than you are right now. I kiss the tip of her nose. Happiness looks good on you, Kenna. She touches my cheek and smiles up at me.
Thanks to you.
I shake my head. I'm not responsible for tonight. I'm not the one who saved up every penny and moved to this town and walked to work every day to try and...
I love you, Ledger.
She says it so effortlessly, like it's the easiest thing she's ever said.
You don't have to say it back. I just want you to know how much you...
I love you too. She grins and then presses her lips firmly to mine. I try to kiss her back, but she's still smiling against my mouth. As much as I want to take off her clothes and whisper I love you repeatedly against her skin, I'd much rather just hold her for a while and give us both time to process everything that happened today. So much happened today, and there's still so much left. I'm not moving. I say.
What do you mean?
I'm not selling this house. I'm going to sell the new one. I want to stay here.
When did you decide that?
Just now. My people are here. This is my home. Maybe I'm crazy, considering how many hours I've put into building that house, but Roman put those hours in too. Maybe I'll sell it to Roman for the cost of materials. It's the least I can do. After all, Roman might have been the catalyst for how today turned out. Had he not forced me to go back and check on Kenna that night, I'm not sure any of us could have gotten to this point. Kenna is done talking, apparently. She kisses me, and she doesn't stop until an hour later when we're exhausted and sweaty and satiated and wrapped in each other's arms. I stare at her until she falls asleep, and then I stare up at the ceiling because I can't fall asleep. I can't stop thinking about that fucking pigeon. What are the chances Scotty had no connection to that? What are the chances he did? It could have just been a coincidence, but it also could have been a sign. A message from wherever he is. Maybe it doesn't matter whether something is a coincidence or a sign. Maybe the best way to cope with the loss of the people we love is to find them in as many places and things as we possibly can. And in the off chance that the people we lose are still somehow able to hear us, maybe we should never stop talking to them. I'm going to be so good to your girls, Scotty. I promise.
Chapter 42. Kenna. I unbuckle Diem from her booster seat and help her out of Ledger's truck. I already have the cross in my hand, so I grab the hammer from the floorboard.
You sure you don't want me to help?
Ledger asks. I smile at him reassuringly and shake my head. This is something I want to do with Diem. I lead her to the edge of the road where I first found the cross, and I kick around in the grass and dirt with the toe of my sneaker until I find the hole the cross was in. I hand the cross to Diem. See that hole? She leans forward to inspect the ground. Stick it right there. Diem drives the cross into the hole.
Why are we putting this here?
I push down on the cross, making sure it's stable. Because it'll make your Nana happy to know it's here, in case she ever drives by.
Will it make my daddy happy?
I kneel down next to Diem. I've missed so much of her life, which is why I want every minute we spend together to be authentic. I'm always as truthful as I can be with her.
No, probably not.
Your daddy thought memorials were silly. But your Nana doesn't. And sometimes we do things for people we love, even though we wouldn't choose to do those things for ourselves. Diem reaches for the hammer.
Can I do it?
I hand her the hammer and she hits the cross a few times. It doesn't do much, so when she hands the hammer back to me, I hit it 3 times until it's secured into the ground. I wrap my arms around Diem and we stare at the cross. Is there anything you want to say to your daddy? Diem thinks about it for a moment, and then says,
What do I say? Do I make a wish?
I laugh. You can try, but he's not a genie or Santa Claus.
I wish for a baby sister or a baby brother.
Don't you dare grant her wish yet, Scotty. I've known Ledger for all of 5 months. I pick up Diem and walk her back to the truck.
It takes more than a wish to make a sibling.
I know. We have to buy an egg from Walmart. That's how babies grow.
I buckle her into the booster seat.
Not exactly.
Babies grow in their mother's tummies. Remember how I told you that you grew in my tummy?
Oh, yeah. Then can you grow another baby?
I stare at Diem, not sure how to answer that.
How about we just get another cat? Ivy needs a friend.
Diem throws her hands in the air, excited.
Yes, another kitten!
I kiss her on the head and shut her door. Ledger is side-eyeing me when I open the passenger door. He points to the middle of the seat, so I scoot all the way over and buckle in. He grabs my hand and threads our fingers together. He's looking at me with a glimmer in his eye, as if the idea of giving Diem a sibling excites him. Ledger kisses me, and then he starts to drive. For the first time in a long, long time, I want to listen to the radio. I want to hear any song, even the sad ones. I lean forward and turn on the radio. It's the first time we've listened to anything in this truck, other than the safe playlist Ledger made me. He glances at me when he realizes what I've done. I just smile at him and lean against his shoulder. Music still makes me think of Scotty. But thinking of Scotty no longer makes me sad. Now that I've forgiven myself, the reminders of him only make me smile. Epilogue. Dear Scotty, I'm sorry I hardly write to you anymore. I used to write to you because I was lonely, so I guess it's a good thing the letters are few and far between now. I still miss you. I'll always miss you. But I'm convinced that the holes you left behind are only holes felt by us. Wherever you are, you're complete. That's what matters. Diem is growing so fast. She just turned 7. It's hard to wrap my mind around the idea that I wasn't here for the first 5 years of her life, because it feels like I've always been here. I'm sure that has a lot to do with Ledger and your parents. They tell me stories about her growing up and show me videos, so it sometimes seems like I missed nothing at all. I don't know that Diem even remembers a life without me in it. To her, I've always been here. I know that's because all the people who loved you gave her everything she needed when you and I couldn't be there. She still lives with your parents, although I see her every day. She stays with Ledger and me at least two nights a week. She has her own bedroom at both houses. We eat dinner together every night. I'd love for her to live with me full-time, but I also know it's important she keeps the routine she's had since birth. And Patrick and Grace deserve to be the major component in her life. I would never want to take that from them. Since the day they accepted me into her life, I've never felt unwelcome, not for one day or even one second. They didn't accept me with conditions. They just accepted me like I belong here with all the people who loved you. You were surrounded by good people, Scotty. From your parents to your best friend to your best friend's parents. I have never met a family more loving. The people that were in your life are now the people who are in my life. And I'll do everything I can to continue to show them as much love and respect as you gave them. I'll treat each of my relationships with the same level of significance and respect I give to the naming process. You know how seriously I take naming things. I thought long and hard about what to name Diem when she was born, and I even took 3 days to name Ivy. The last name I handed out 2 weeks ago was by far one of the more important ones, yet somehow the easiest name to come up with. When they placed our newborn son on my chest, I looked down at him through teary eyes, and I said, "Hi, Scotty. Love, Kenna." Kenna Rowan's playlist. 1. Raise Your Glass, Pink. 2. Dynamite, BTS. 3. Happy, Pharrell Williams. 4. Particle Man, They Might Be Giants. 5. I'm Good, The Mowglis. 6. Yellow Submarine, The Beatles. 7. I'm Too Sexy, Right Said Fred. 8. Can't Stop the Feeling, Justin Timberlake. 9. Thunder, Imagine Dragons. 10. Run the World, Girls, Beyonce. 11. You Can't Touch This, MC Hammer. 12. Forgot About Dre, Dr. Dre featuring Eminem. 13. Vacation, Dirty Heads. 14. The Loadout, Jackson Brown. 15. Stay, Jackson Brown. 16. The King of Bedside Manor, Bare Naked Ladies. 17. Empire State of Mind, Jay-Z. 18. Party in the USA, Miley Cyrus. 19. Fucking Best Song Ever, Wallpaper. 20. Shake It Off, Taylor Swift. 21. Bang, AJR. We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Reminders of Him by Colleen Hoover, performed by Brittany Presley and Ryan West. Performance copyright 2021 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.